ladies and gentlemen, the greatest Dallas Maverick of all time. There is a statue outside of the arena looking at the street named after him. He is the sixth all-time leading scorer in the history of the whole league. Give it up for number 41, Dirk Nowitzki.
Amazing.
This is great. Before we get started, though, I don't know if that was quite the welcoming that you deserve as the best of all time. Let's one more time. Let's give it up for number 41.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Nice Bayern shirt. They made it yesterday.
It's great to be here. I want to welcome all you guys, Dirty, welcome you to Top Shelf with Devin Harris, sponsored by Hennessy. Hennessy's done a great job in sponsoring this podcast, something I like doing. I've had 3 episodes, but obviously nothing compares to the best for the last. So once again, let's welcome Dirk, and we're going to get this popping off.
Let's have some fun.
All right. I call you Dirty. Where does that nickname come from? How did that originate?
It goes all the way back to Dirty, Nasty, Filthy. We even had those were the good old days with Finn and Steve. And I don't know, it was just something that came easy off the tongue, and Nasty and Filthy for some reason never stuck.
Never stuck, yeah.
And but Dirty was, I think, easier to say for some Americans than
right.
Dirk or
okay.
Dirk, how we say it in Europe. And so it was just always Dirty, and that's the one that stuck. And over the years, I mean, you guys know they were even on the Mavs website. They try to find some, and it just never really, nothing else really was good and stuck. I mean. So we stuck with Dirty, and it was pretty good.
Who actually discovered you? I know that there's a list of people. I'm thinking about 3 people, and you have to correct my. I'm going to butcher these names. Obviously, Holger's one, right? Jürgen.
Say Holger's last name.
I'm not doing that. Jürgen Meng. And
you did some research for this.
Menyek Santos. Is that? No? Okay.
Not who that is one. That?
I don't know.
Let me see. How do you write his name?
All right. Whoever's in charge of research, fired.
Never heard of this guy.
All right. So tell us, like, who actually founded you?
So, you know, before Holger, I started in... and actually in the school team, and Jürgen Meng was one of them, but he was just basically, he was a PE teacher in school. He really didn't know much about basketball, but he said, hey, we're gonna have a basketball team, you're tall, you gotta be in, and at the time, actually, I didn't play basketball, I played handball and tennis. Obviously, we don't have to go all the way back, you guys know most of my story now, but that was kind of my first time I played in a team. Before, I played in my backyard. My sister played, so my mom played. So I was always around the sport, but I never actually played in a team. So I joined the school team, and it was fun. And then later on, like a year or so later, my cousin, who I grew up with, my 2 cousins in the same house, and my male cousin started to play basketball, and he loved it. And he was like, hey, you should probably come to a practice. You know, you're super tall, and, you know, it'll be fun. And then I joined the club team and loved it from day one. And that's where the coach there, whose name is Peter Stahl, so not even close to that.
Okay.
And he was a very good player at the time. He played, like, second division in Germany, so he was a good player. And I'll never forget, I was probably about 13, and he told me, you know, the way you play, so I see you more like a Tony Kukoc type. I don't see you as a normal big player. I want you to face the basket. So I really played, when I was 13, I already played small forward, even though I was taller than the four and the five on our team. And so, you know, I don't really give him enough credit, I think, over my career, because he's really the one that had the original vision for me to even stick out. When Holger then a few years later came in the picture, he saw me in the game and saw what I was doing. But it was because of my original coach said, you're playing more with the face to the basket. And so that's really how it started. And obviously everybody knows Holger came in the picture at 15, 15 and a half. I met him, and then, you know, the rest of the story is talked about millions of times. I always started working maybe at the beginning once or twice a week, because I was still in school, and then I finished school, and then that's when I really started to work a little professional. I drove. Holger lived like an hour away from me, so I drove an hour to him. I practiced for 2 hours, drove back, ate, and then usually had team practice in the evening. So that was my grind on a daily basis. And before I got drafted and came over here. See what your wine can do here. Let's
okay,
see
what is it? Wait. Speaking of Holger, did he really score 100 in a game once? Did he have a game like that? Okay, whoever's in charge of the wine, okay. Fired.
You fired a lot of people tonight.
Holger, did he really score 100 in a game? Did he have a game like that?
Holger was so far ahead of his time. You know, just he mentored me. He had a mentor that came from the U.S., was stationed there. And so when Holger was 16, 17, he played already on the first team somewhere in Germany. And they had this American there, and he was just really good player and kind of saw Holger and taught him the game. And so I think that's why Holger years and years later did that for me, because he had a mentor role in his life. And so Holger, you know, back in the days or whatever, I mean, he's born, 45, so this must be like early 60s when he learned the game. I mean, this is way back. And so, you know, they still had the set shot and they had the running hook shots. I mean, it was still, you know, the Bob Cousy and those days.
And by the Holger. Way, this is a question. So the name of Holger's mentor, right? Ernie Butler?
Yes.
Okay.
So there you go.
Yeah.
Okay. So that was Ernie Butler. And he taught him the game. And so Holger was like shooting like jump shots before anybody in Germany even knew what that was. And so he was just super ahead of his game. He was the captain of the 72 Olympics, Olympic team for Germany, played which the Olympics were in Munich. So he was just way ahead of his time, and that's why he could play. I mean, but in the 60s, I'm sure there were not a lot of. It was more handball players playing some basketball or volleyball players. So he dominated every game.
What's the greatest piece of advice that Holger's ever given you?
Probably just, you know, keep getting better. See yourself as a work in progress. You know, never see yourself as a finished product. And that's what the great thing about basketball. You can never, you know, learn the whole game, every shot. It's just so versatile. The sport is so great. There's just always something to learn, something to work on. And so really just keep pushing. And we were rigorous about it, at the beginning. I practice every day, at least 6 times a week, and then usually a game on the weekend or a game and then practice. So really just keep pushing, keep improving, and always work on your craft.
When did the math take in? You know, he's always about the angle of the trajectory of the shot. When did that come into place? And what's the angle? I can't remember. He used to tell them to me all the time.
Like, yeah, you know what? I'm confused myself. He obviously studied math and physics, which weren't my strong suits. So I always told Holger, you do the math and the physics. You just tell me what I need to do, and I'll try to execute whatever you say. But I think the top, the grade angle is supposed to be like between 45 and 48 degrees, the ball coming down, which is very high. So yeah, we used to work on the arc all the time. When I was 15, 16, my shot was way flatter than this. And so we literally started when he met me. Now, I've already played 3-4 years, so I had my own technique. And we literally started from scratch. You know, put the ball right here on your head. The elbow goes in, points towards the basket, and just lift it up. And we started literally right under the basket. Repetition, hundreds of times. Off the window. Well, back then we didn't even have a glass board. It was a little wooden board where I practiced in Germany growing up. So just hundreds of shots working on not going forward with the arm, but the elbow extends first, and then the wrist comes. Falls. And that's how you get the ball. You shoot higher. The elbow has to extend, and at the end is the wrist. And so, I mean, it took years. It was a work in progress for a long, long time. And you know this, still, when he came, while I was already in the league, we worked on our stuff. I mean, he won't be here for like a couple weeks. I've had some bad games. I'll be like, Holger, come on over. I need an emergency meeting, and then we'll just get back in the gym and just slowly work on the mechanics again. And so I owe this man obviously a lot.
If I'm not mistaken, and correct me if I'm wrong, at that angle, I think that's when two balls can fit in the rim at the same time. So the error is a lot bigger.
Yes.
You don't have to be perfect if you're at that angle, right?
You can have more error side to side, front to back.
Yep.
And so that was his reasoning. And we actually did that test when two balls fit in at the same time, because I didn't believe him. I was like, there's no chance. So I wanted to see it, and actually the rim is big enough to have two balls fit in at the same time if you shoot it if it comes down at the right angle. So, you know, you can also shoot too high or too flat. So it's got to be in a good zone, and then there's maximum errors you can make during a shot.
Okay, you mentioned you played handball, tennis, right, growing up. If you applied the same amount of training as you did basketball, what do you think you would be best at of those three? Oh, those two, I should say, because we know how good you are at basketball.
Yeah, I think I would have been a decent handball player. You know, my dad was a really good player, and he was my coach. I loved handball. I mean, I know this sport's not big here. They play it, I guess, a little bit in the Northeast. It's a little bit of like soccer, but with your hands. And super cool sport. So you throw the ball into the goal, and I loved it. And my dad obviously thought, being my coach, that I can go somewhere in that sport. And so he was very frustrated, of course, when I started basketball and didn't follow in his footsteps because he thought I'll be a good player. Tennis, I don't think I would have made it that far. Back in the days, it was hard at that. Now everybody's a little taller, but back in the days, it was hard to keep up with the little guys. And so I think handball, I probably would have said second, and then tennis third.
You didn't always have the wicked serve? Like,
I had a good serve and a good forehand. The movement, as you know, has always been an issue in any sport, really. I guess for my size, I was decent athletic, but I was never really a great athlete.
The process leading up to the 99 draft, it felt like Donnie and Don were protecting you like nuclear codes, right?
90, when it came to scouting. 98 was my draft.
Okay, 98.
Yeah.
Fired again.
Yeah.
They really didn't want other teams realizing how good you were. Was that the experience on the other end from what you were hearing from them? They're going to try to hide you, stash you away so they could get you where they wanted you?
I wasn't quite sure what the plan was, but I knew, you know, I was here before the draft because I was here for the Nike Hoop Summit. I'm not sure how deep your guys' knowledge is, but
that's actually Nike, going on right now, right? Is it?
It was last week.
Last week.
Yeah,
okay.
It was last week. I watched a little bit of some of the game, and it's always now in Portland. But back in the days when I played, it was one of the first years they started it. I think maybe the third year or fourth year. Nike puts this game together of the best high school Americans against the best players from the rest of the world at the same age. And so that was always at the time around the Final Four. And so, of course, I'm hyped, my first time at the Final Four. So we practiced here first in Dallas. We came here. Donnie was our assistant coach. And we had a decent little squad, so we practiced here at the Mavs facility. We were able to use the Mavs locker room. It was the coolest thing ever. And then we flew down to San Antonio for the Final Four and for our game. So we were able to watch both semifinals, and then our game was the next day. And so I had a good game there. And then all of a sudden, my world changed overnight with this one game. I guess it was live on ESPN2 at the time. There were a bunch of college scouts, NBA scouts. So, you know, my life with that one game changed overnight. I mean, the phone at home and my parents' house rang nonstop. I had about 40 offers from colleges. They didn't understand the time zone in late 90s, so it was ringing 3, 4, 5 in the morning. My parents were losing their minds. So we had to get an answering machine, actually, because it got so bad. And so that just, my whole world is turned upside down in that period. And of course, Donnie, long answer, Donnie was my assistant coach. I figured he liked what he saw, but I wasn't 100% sure whether he liked it enough to pick me a lottery pick. I knew the Mavs had the 6th pick at the time. And so I wasn't sure. And also I said, I'm not sure my body's ready for the NBA. So I was watching, I was looking at some colleges. I actually did a little college tour after the Hoop Summit. I looked at Stanford, Cal, and Kentucky at the time. And so I wasn't sure, is my body ready for the NBA? Should I go back to college? Should I stay in Europe? There are some great clubs there that I visited, Barcelona, one of them. So that was just a crazy time of my life there, that couple months, not knowing really what to do. And then, sure enough, I decided to leave my name in the draft. But I didn't go to the draft because I wasn't sure, should I show up there? And then nobody picks me. That's a weird look. So I say, I'd rather stay in Germany and let them call me if something happens. And sure enough, Holger gets a call in the middle of the night and says, the Mavs picked us. And so this is how that whole, yeah. Actually, well, the Mavs didn't pick us.
Milwaukee
picked me, and then they traded me for Tractor Trailer and somebody else, which was still one of the best moves on draft day because they also got Pat Garrity on the same deal. They traded him to Phoenix for Steve Nash. So on the same day, we got Steve and I, which was, it was a heck of a deal from the Nelsons at the time. That was well done.
During this summit, you met Charles Barkley, yes? Or he saw you play?
That was earlier.
Earlier?
That was another Nike trip.
Okay. He said he offered you money to go to Auburn. How much did he offer you?
It didn't get to the money.
Okay.
I didn't get to the money part. But I'm sure I could have gotten an Escalade out of it or something. but it never got there. But no, Nike did a little tour with the pros to promote the game. And there was like Jake Kidd, Scottie Pippen, I mean, Gary Payton. They had a squad, Sharif at the time, Vint Baker. So they were touring through Europe and did some games in Paris and also in Berlin. And we got picked to play against these guys, which was an unbelievable, obviously, experience. And so afterwards, you know, it was a wide open game. They were there to party and enjoy and drive cars on the Autobahn and play cards. I mean, they were having a ball. And so nobody really cared about the game. But and this was better than our Super Bowl. So we were going 100 miles an hour. And so I had a decent game, I guess, and Charles came up to me afterwards and offered me to go to Auburn, and I'm glad that never went down. So,
I know this about you. I'm not sure they do, but if you would have gone to college, I'm pretty sure Kentucky was the place you would have chosen. You have a love for Kentucky. By the way, they just got a new coach. How do you feel about where they're?
Well, God, we're in the UK here. Okay. Yeah. I mean, I had a good time in all the visits, honestly. But when I landed in Kentucky, they had fans for me at the airport. I mean, it was like I was a rock star already. And I was like, how do they even know me? How do they know my name? They had signs. Probably the coach made him go there. you go to the airport and you wait on Dirk. So I was super surprised. And then the way they run it there, already back then, the dorm, I mean, they had pool table. They had, I mean, it was incredible. Had a great time at Cal and Stanford too. The campus in Stanford is tremendous. But I think I would have picked the UK. They just won the championship with Scott Paget, and I think McClure was there at the time. So they had a great team, and that would have been fun. I think everybody that comes in a league from college always talks about the college experience. I think that's one thing I missed a little bit. I wish maybe I would have gone 1 year somewhere just to experience the camaraderie, which in the NBA, everybody kind of goes their own way. Sometimes I do regret that, but at the end, I think college ball was still so different at the time with, no bigs were shooting, the big have to lift weights and be under the hoop. And so maybe that would have ruined my game in a way. So I think it was the right decision to go pro.
I think so.
But I sometimes think that would have been sweet for a year somewhere in college, have some fun.
All right, we're going to fast forward a little bit. Early years in Dallas, you struggled, more so your rookie year. Did you really consider going back to Germany and giving up on the NBA? And what was kind of like your low point? And then what convinced you not to go?
Well, I don't think it got to the point where I wanted to give up. But, of course, doubts come to your mind. I think that's pretty normal. Things weren't going well. I wasn't picking up stuff as fast as I thought. The game was way more athletic and faster than I thought. And I was struggling. And it didn't help that that whole year was a lockout year, obviously. So I didn't have a full training camp. I only had like a week or 10 days of training camp. So honestly, the season started. I didn't know all the plays. I didn't know all the defensive calls. I was just kind of out there trying to do my best and occupy a space. So it was a hard season. And then, back in the days in the lockout year, we had back to back to backs. So I'm rolling in here playing one game a week in Germany on a cool bus ride and then bus back. And we were in three different cities in three nights. I think we had six games and eight nights, that year. I mean, it was insane. I had no idea what city I was in at some point. So it was really hard. So the lockout didn't really help my rookie year. But it was kind of good to go through. But doubts were always normal. I think the lowest points were games where I didn't play at all. There were some where Nelly, I mean, I was never a great defender in my career, but my rookie year was really bad. So he basically kind of picked matchups for me before the game. He's like, okay, Dirk's coming off the bench. They have one guy that can't really play offensively, so I'm going to stick it on him. And so, but when we played the really good teams, he didn't think like I could guard anyone out there, which is sweet. It's good, great confidence from my coach in me. So there were games where I just didn't come in at all. And that was probably a low point. And then afterwards, I was just so kind of, rattled, distraught that we went in the weight room and did a workout, got a sweat, got on the bike. Just, work out a little bit the frustration. And I think those games were really hard when you're used to in Europe, and I was getting better and I was the man. I was playing 40-something minutes. And then you come here and you start from scratch. You're nobody and you're not playing at all. Those were some hard times. But I had a good crew. Holger always was there for me. I had Steve and Mike who were amazing to me my first year, support-wise, taking me out the hotel, showing me around. Teaching me the game, but also teaching me how to be professional off the floor. So I had some great veterans around that really were key for me as well. So that standpoint, I was really lucky. At AC Green, you remember AC Green? Oh, it was like the Iron Man who played 1,000 games in a row without missing one. And so I just had some pros that were unbelievable and truly professional. And so I learned a lot my first couple of years. And honestly, I just wanted to learn. I wanted to learn, watch these guys. How do they train? How do they act with the media? How do they do appearances? You find your own rhythm and routine. And that took a while.
Speaking of frustrating times, when Stevie left, I know you were very frustrated. I know. you know, kind of let the air out of the city. Like, you know, you guys did so well. The kind of party was over a little bit. Do you think that was necessary for both of you to reach your full potential? Obviously, two straight MVPs for him. You got one after that. Have you ever dreamt about, like, what it would look like if he ever stayed?
And yeah.
That's a loaded question because when he left, I came. So.
Yeah. So we messed that up, really. Yeah, we messed that up. Which we did well there. We did well. But we did mess up. We did mess up. Yeah, that was a tough time. I mean, obviously, Steve and I grew very close my first couple of years. And, you know, he was my best friend, and we did everything together. And it was a gut punch for sure. But I think at that point, I learned, hey, this is actually not just the NBA. It's not just a bunch of friends and some buddies playing some hoops. This is big time money. They're big time business decisions. And, you know, Mark made that call at the time, didn't think that his body was last. It wasn't that he didn't think he was skilled enough. It was he broke down a little bit. He had back surgery while he was with us. And so Mark didn't think he could give him a 5-6 year deal, and he didn't think his body would last. So Steve and I sometimes go back a little bit and think about what could have been. I mean, it for sure would have been a fun run there for a couple more years. I do agree that we both reached our full potential without each other. Basically, Finn left here the following year, and then everybody was kind of looking at me, you know, now you're the best player, you got a lead. And I'm like, I was hiding behind Steve and Mike my first couple of years. I was like, I'm not sure I'm ready for it, but I had to grow into that role. And for Steve, I think he had a perfect mix of players for him in Phoenix. I mean, a bunch of unbelievable athletes, some shooters around. D'Antoni was a perfect system for him. So, I mean, it was for both of us, for our careers, it was probably the best for our development. I do think there in 05, 06, 07, I think we could have squeezed out one championship. I think we even made it to the finals with you, you know, in 06. No offense.
But, hey, you never beat San Antonio till I got here.
That's true. That's a good point. It's almost like you planned that response. Yeah. So I think the league there was definitely up for grabs. But, you know, it didn't work out, and it worked out better for both of our careers.
Speaking of leadership, obviously him leaving kind of forced you into that mode. Obviously, for you not being, you know, from the same background, was that difficult for you to step into that, to grow into that role? And throughout your career, every decision you make, like you're looking at it through that leadership as you go older. And I will say, the leader you were in 06 was not quite the leader that I saw when I came back in 13. You're completely different. So you definitely were a lot better as you got older. And really, I think the city can see that with him leaving, Finn leaving, you really stepped up to that mode and really became the face of not only the franchise, but obviously the NBA at that point.
Yeah, it was a hard time for me, though. I mean, to learn, I wasn't a born leader. I'm a quiet guy. I'm a shy guy. Usually, I'm not a guy that stands there and holds big speeches. That's just not my thing. So I kind of think I had to find my own way of leading without sounding fake. You know, if I would have gotten up there and hold a 20-minute rah-rah speech, hey, you guys got to defend, and then I go out and can't guard anybody, I'm like, well, that's not cool. So I don't know. I wanted to find my own way, my own style. You've seen it as mostly lead by example. I wanted to get early to the gym. I wanted to play sick. I wanted to always be there for the team. More than the rah-rah guy. And so but it took me a while. I've made some mistakes. One time I was yelling at Jet. I remember when we lost and when he let Nashi dribble up and shoot a three. Right. And just stuff like that you don't do. You don't. And it, like I said, it took me a couple of years to get better. And I learned from, you know, 05, lost to Phoenix, 06, Miami, 07, first round. Those were some tough times, and I had to grow from that as a player and definitely as a leader as well. And I honestly think going back now, I could have been a better leader, maybe more vocal at times, maybe a little bit more confrontational. That was never my strong suit either. You know, go if somebody messes up, go to him or go to after the game, go up to him. What are we doing? What is that? Why did you quit there? Or be more, you know, at times confrontation with coaches and decisions. And so, but that was never my style. It was never my style. And that's one thing I think over my career leadership, I could have been a lot better at.
This is my favorite story. We were in the midst of a playoff with Phoenix, and Avery was riding you hard, right? And he was giving like a rah-rah speech because that was his thing. And at that point, like, Steve was giving us the business. And at that, I think that point, he won the MVP, and you should have won it that year. And he's in the locker room, and this is another thing that makes you very honest. You're just honest. So he's like, I'm going to do my Avery voice. I know he hates it. He's like, are you going to go back and get your trophy? If Steve Nash comes in the paint, are you going to knock him down? Dirk was like, no. Oh, hell. How are we going to beat this team? But he did it in a way where he motivated you so much. I think this was after game 5 or game 4. And he told you, when I think it was Patrick Ewan and Olajuwon or somebody, when Olajuwon showed him, like, he was the MVP. He went there, he went back and took his trophy.
Oh, it was David Robinson.
It was David Robinson and Olajuwon.
Go back and get your trophy.
Next game, Dirk had 50. Yeah. 50.
So this was 06.
Yeah.
This was 06 when we ended up going to the finals. So I do remember this. Avery had some classic video sessions. Just roasting eyes, and our, obviously me and Jet usually on the receiving end because our defense was a suspect. And so this play, I still remember. So we lost game 4, we got blown out in Phoenix, and Avery just, you can tell in the morning, coming in on one, coming in hot.
And you always knew, like, when he came in to practice, he was already in a full sweat, you know, running around. He's like, oh, it's going to be
And not looking at anyone, not saying good morning, just straight on one. So the film session from game 4, I think there was a rebound.
Right.
And I'm about to grab the offensive rebound. I'm like, yeah, there's really nobody around me. Steve just grabbed me and threw me down and takes the rebound. The ref, of course, swallowed his whistle. I'm like, okay, that's how we're playing now? It was that kind of night.
Right.
But Avery ran that play back by 10 times. You let this 5'7" guy throw you around? And so he was on one. And that was classic. And so he was like, yeah, basically his message was, you know, he stole your MVP trophy, and you got to win this series for us. You got to be more aggressive. You got to play better. And that it worked.
Yeah. Okay. Let's go towards the end of your career. The last game here, the Mavs did a phenomenal thing. They brought in all of your basketball heroes. Larry Bird, Scottie Pippen, Charles Barkley, Detlef Schrempf. Schrempf? How do you correct my German? Is that right? Okay. And Sean Kemp to celebrate your career. One, what happened at the post-game party? And two, talk about what lessons or inspiration you took from each one of those guys.
So, unfortunately, there was no party. Do you remember?
I do remember. We had to leave, right?
Yes.
Yeah, we had to go to San Antonio. That's right.
Which
once again, fired.
Yeah. So I think at the time, if the league would have known, I think if I would have retired, they would have somehow switched that. But since I didn't announce it anywhere really before, that's what it was. So that was, it was just so emotional for me that night. And then I knew in my head I was going to retire anyways, and I was going to announce it after the game. And it was an amazing, perfect night. And then it was hard, you know, saying bye to everybody and the media and the people in the arena and all the ushers. And And then go back in the plane and having to perform the next night, it was hard. I mean, I didn't sleep much till probably 3 or 4 in the morning. I was scrolling through some stuff on social media, and so it was tough. That was tough to go out the next night and then somewhat scrape together a decent performance in San Antonio, and then they played the video before, and I got super emotional. So it was just an emotional time, because you know, if you do something for such a long time, it always hurts to step away. And these guys just, you know, my number one hero was Michael Jordan. He didn't want to come to my last game. No kidding. So when I started, it was the 90s era, the Bulls era. You know, Michael Jordan, Scottie Pippen, later on Kukoc. So I was a huge diehard Bulls fan in the 90s. And so Scottie came. And then in the 90s, of course, I watched Triumph. And he had a great career, was best sixth man a couple times, was an all-star, I think, in this league. And so he played Indianapolis first, and then he played here in Dallas for a second. But his best years were in Seattle, and they went to the finals a couple times with the glove, with Sean Kemp, with Deadlift Shrimp. So I just loved watching that team, their intensity, Sean Kemp being so athletic, high flying, so much fun to watch. And Det being a guy from Germany, really, it was the first guy from Germany to really make it, have an all-star type caliber career, and just so solid. I mean, he could shoot, he could post, he was a good defender, good rebounder. So to me, he was a great all-around player that I was basically trying to mimic my game after, because he was that good. So that was Sean Kemp and Shrimp. And I always loved Barkley. I don't know, it's just the way he played the game with talking trash and fighting people. It was just the opposite of what I am. And so I guess opposites attract. And loved watching him play, and at 6'5", 6'6", whatever he was, the way he rebounded and dunked the ball, it's unbelievable. So loved him. And actually, side story, when I started playing basketball, I started with number 11 because my dad had 11, and I saw Charles Barkley have number 14 in the Olympics in 92 in Barcelona, and so I loved him so much that I switched my number actually to number 14, and that's why internationally I played number 14, and then obviously I wanted 14 here, and I couldn't get it, and I flipped the number, so out of 14 went 41, but that was because of Charles, and he was, loved him. And who are we missing
Bird.
Now?
Bird.
Oh, Larry. I mean, Larry obviously was a little bit before my time in the 80s. I mean, his career kind of finished there in the early 90s. But obviously, I'm a student of the game. I went back, and the way he played the game, the skill level, so far ahead of his time. So he's one of the kind that I watched a lot and kind of tried to learn how he played the game and read the game. So yeah, those are the guys that came, and still unbelievable that you even get this crew together, let alone to come here and watch that game and say a few words about me. That meant a lot, and I'll for sure never forget it. And always thank Mark, and obviously what the Mavs did there, my last game here.
Who do you look at in the league right now and see like, oh, I'd really like to play. I would have loved to play with this guy. And who do you think is carrying on the type of legacy that you've tried to exemplify?
Tough question. Who do I like to play? I think the easy answer is Luka. I mean, I think that obviously I got a chance to see him. My last year was his first season. I mean, what a talent, what a player. I think we saw glimpses in his first year. I never thought he can get this big, this good, this, I mean, it seems like he's getting better from year to year. I'm like, how is he doing it? I mean, you always think, we've watched sport games now, basketball for 30 years, and you always think you've seen it all, and this kid does something once a game where you're like, what? What is he doing? The creativity, the IQ, how he reads the game, how he understands the game, and then has the skill to pull that off is just is unbelievable. So obviously that's an easy answer since he's here, and I watch him a lot now. Around the league, I mean, I was just super proud of how far the international game has come. Where when I first came, you know, there was a few guys in the league, definitely no European franchise players. And then now, 20-some-odd years later, we have MVPs, we have franchise players everywhere. The influx of international players is huge. So that's I'm super proud of that, where the international game has gone. So I love to watch these guys. Obviously, Jokic, and I mean, Giannis doesn't really play like a European. I would take one dribble from half court. That wasn't really what the
That's not American either, though. I don't know what that is.
So, I mean, I just love watching these guys play, and it's been fun to see where the game started when I came in 98, 99, where the bigs were all physical and rebounders and pushing onto the basket, to now they're bringing the ball up, they're initiating offense, they're picking and popping, they're rolling, they're doing everything, they're driving both ways. The skill level, especially on the big position, has been something that's been incredible to watch.
Being able to look back now, what decision about your career would you reverse? And what's your biggest regret?
I mean, it's hard to say. Of course, I've made some mistakes on and off the floor, but at the end of the day, you know, you learn from that stuff and you have to move on. You can always say, I shouldn't have done this. I shouldn't have yelled at this guy here. I should have had a better game. I should have played better in 06 final series. But I mean, at the end of the day, you know, that's part of your career, and you have to, you know, at some point after the frustration, and you have to look back and say, okay, this is what I got to work on, and you get better from it, and you be a better player, a better person the next season. So it's kind of hard to say what was my biggest regret. I think I try to, you know, get everything out of my talent. I always work hard, because I didn't want to waste with my size the talent that I had. And so I always worked hard and pushed myself in the summers to get better. And yeah, I'm not sure if there's one thing that I really regret. I'm thinking. Yeah. It's a tough question.
It is. That's why we're here.
Yeah.
Hard-hitting stuff. What would you say to 20-year-old Dirk if given the opportunity?
I mean, just keep listening and learning. I think that's an obvious thing. Learn from your elders. Talk to everybody. Be a little bit more outgoing early. I think that was hard for me. Learn more. Maybe study something during your career. I think I was so focused on just basketball, hoops 24/7, go home, watch League Pass. And I think there's just more to life a little bit. And so now I'm out of the league. I'm like, oh God, I'm trying to catch up on these business meetings. I wish I would have learned another language, maybe another instrument. So I had all this time that you kind of waste as an athlete, because you're just laying around, you're watching games, you're on your phone, and you're talking to people. And so I think that's one thing, maybe keep learning stuff also off the floor, and keep improving not only your skill set on the court but off the court.
All right. Mavs are kicking ass right now.
Right. Rolling.
Rolling. Assess this team going into the playoffs, and the way that I view them, and only you can answer this, great team chemistry, right? Sort of similar to the team you guys had in 2011. It was that kind of chemistry that I see going forward. So just talk about what this team looks like going to the playoffs.
Yeah, I mean, we're rolling. We are rolling. It's been fun to watch. Since I'm not around all the time, I'm not in the locker room. I'm not in, obviously, around enough. I go to some games, which obviously I watch some of the games. I'll see the chemistry's good, but you don't really know until you are every day around the team, and you see how they act each other in practice. And but it seems like everything is going great, and so I'm happy for them. I'm happy for them, how they're playing. I think the key acquisitions around trade deadline were amazing, great deals. We needed, you know, another big center who can also roll. Now we have a two-headed monster there. Love what they bring on both ends. And same with obviously PJ, was an athletic. You can never have enough 6'8", 6'9" defenders nowadays that can switch everything. He's smart, he can play, he can make a shot. So just some key guys came in that really put us even higher and have us playing at a super high level. And then I think from last year, just Kyrie and Luka understanding each other better, playing off each other better, knowing when to be aggressive, when to defer. I just think they have a lot better understanding of each other. And then, you know, even like a Exum signing for the minimum from Europe is a, oi, oi, oi. So that's, he was a heck of a signing and he made some great plays for us. So I think we've done a lot of great moves that fit in well. So I'm looking forward to the playoffs. We're playing our best basketball at the right time. And the Clippers are tough, though. Clippers are always tough against us. They have a lot of length on the perimeter. They have a lot of guys to throw at Luka. So it'll be a fun series. We never really had an answer for Kawhi. So it'll be a fun series. I can't wait to get the playoffs going. But I do think Mavs in six.
All right, last question. This is a good one, though.
Already? Wow, we're flying.
We're flying. I don't know, what time is it, Eula?
10 to 7.
Okay, we got a little bit more time. Okay. Discuss your relationship with the city of Dallas. Now, when I got here, you kind of set the precedent of how you give back, and being the leader that you are, I think all of us kind of felt that we had to fall in place and give back the way that you do. So talk about how that started and why you feel such a tie to the city.
So, I mean, it started really my first year, I'd say. And I've obviously told this story a couple of times, too, that I was struggling my first year here. And there was a culture difference. There was a language barrier there. I was, I didn't understand everything. So, but the people were always great to me and gracious and welcoming. And wherever I went, whether I got food on somewhere or everybody felt like... they wanted me to succeed here. They wanted to support me, and I always felt that. I've always felt the love and the loyalty from the people here. And so, and then of course my first year with, it started to get better, and then with Finn and Steve and really learning from them, how do you even give back to the community? What does that even mean? And, you have a foundation and you work hard, you go to these events, you meet people and you always play. You play hard because, these people spend a lot of their hard-earned money on you. You have to be out there. You don't rest. You play. I mean, Finn played
Iron
every
Man.
Night,
Iron
40-something
Man.
Minutes.
Right.
I mean, Nelly drove him into the ground for a long time, but... I mean, Finn was the ultimate pro, and so just learning from these guys, how do you act? How do you even give back? What does that mean? And so I founded my foundation and early in my career, and so we've been doing obviously great things and found great organizations, and so I developed, I grew into this community, and obviously now it's home. I've been here for 25 years, so I've been here actually longer than. Then I've been in Germany, and so I feel like this is home, and my kids are born here now, and so this is where we're at.
So your foundation, I've been to all the events that you guys do. Yeah, I mean, you guys raise a lot of money. Just to kind of talk about what groups you give back to, and what's so important to those groups.
Well, it's mainly women's and kids charities around here, around North Texas. They do a lot of great work. And so we raise funds. I have my tennis event that I'm sure some of you guys have attended. I used to do the Heroes.
It's great tennis. Best bet, you stop inviting me because I can't play tennis.
Yeah. You tried.
I tried.
Yeah,
I tried.
I've done the baseball, the Heroes game, obviously, over the years. And so... We raise funds during the year, and then we give them out. We give out grants to some great organizations that deserve it, that change lives around here. And so that's how we make contributions as to these great organizations that are already existing that do great work around the Metroplex here. So, like I said, we've had the foundation now for over 20 years, and I've done my every year I do my children's hospital visit around Christmas. So I do a food drive a couple times a year. So we do great stuff and trying to help where we can.
This will be the last one. Just kind of catch us up on retirement. What are you doing to kind of fill your time? I know you travel a bunch. You're on the committee for FIBA, not FIFA, FIBA. Saw you a lot at the tournaments out there in the summer. You got inducted to the Hall of Fame last summer. Catch us up because we don't get to see you as often as we used to. So kind of walk us through what you're into now.
Well, it's still busy, honestly, which is very cool. Obviously, the best thing now, the most joy I get from being with the kids every day, seeing they're in great ages now with almost 11, 9, and 7. They started a sports journey, so you can see me at a random tennis pitch in Garland or Richardson on a Saturday. I'm sitting there with my hat on and my glasses and watching the kids play or at some random soccer field around town and just... watching them starting their own sports journey is incredible, and it's also a lot. I mean, I'm sure you guys have active kids. It is, the weekends are a beast. They're a beating from one thing to the next, and so now I know what me and my sister did to my parents all these years. Right. It's a lot, but it's super, super joyful, and it gives me, obviously, a lot of joy in my life. And then we do travel a lot. We have family all across the world. Obviously, with Jess being half Kenyan, half Swedish, we have family all over the world. My family's still in Germany. So we do travel. I want my kids to grow up like citizens of the world, learn about other cultures and languages. And so that's what we've been up to the last 5 years. And then I stay busy with certain stuff. We have a family office here in Dallas that we founded a couple years ago. So we do some small investments. I do some speaking gigs around the country every now and then. I was just in Miami yesterday speaking to a company there. So just little things here and there. Then I go to Switzerland for FIBA. FIBA is the International Basketball Federation that puts on Olympics, World Cup, all that stuff. So I usually go to the big tournaments. I'll be at the Olympics this summer in Paris for a week or 10 days. I go to some youth events, U19, under 17 World Cups. And so it's been a whirlwind. And still, I have some partners in Germany. So I would say I go to Europe a couple times. I would say every couple weeks or every 6 to 8 weeks. I'm in Europe at least. I'm going actually next week. So it's been super busy, but still a lot of time with the kids. And so what I love the most is that I'm my own boss. I don't have to, answer to anybody. I can pick and choose what I want to do. So it's been great. I mean, honestly, when I retired, I thought I'm going to be so bored. I need something. I'm going to get right in. I'm going to try to be for the Mavs and management and be active. And the longer I'm out, I'm like... I'm not sure I want that life right now, especially the traveling with the team again, away from your family so much. And so I kind of put those plans on hold, and it's been already 5 years now. So I've had a loving life and enjoying being active with the kids, playing tennis every now and then. And so it's been a wonderful time.
Great. Dirk Nowitzki. Great. Yeah. Such an interesting character. You also you wrote a book too? Well, you didn't write it. Did you write it? Ghostwriter.
Yeah. I did not write it. No, we have a book. There was a movie a couple years ago. Yes. I mean, there was all sorts of stuff. That
Basketball
came out.
Is jazz.
Definitely jazz. Yeah.
But it was great. I want to thank you guys for coming out. Thank Hennessy for sponsoring my podcast. This is Top Shelf with Devin Harris. Thank you guys.
Thank you guys. That was fun. Yeah, that hour flew by. Thank you guys for having me. Appreciate it. I'm sure we'll see you guys around somewhere at the playoffs.
Mavs in six.
Mavs in six. What are you thinking? What do you think?
I like that a lot, yeah. Yeah. I mean, they gotta beat them sometime. Why not now?
Yeah.
Mavs in six. Sounds good to me.
All right. Thank you guys for coming. Appreciate it.
Give it up for Devin Harris and Dirk Nowitzki. I need more applause than that. Give it up for Devin Harris and Dirk Nowitzki.